This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Leslie Masoner, executive producer of Pure Play Entertainment. Leslie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Give me a little background on you and what Pure Play Entertainment is.
Pure Play Entertainment is a boutique production company. We provide content for streaming services primarily. We do develop our original content, but we have built a agile production company that is trying to fill a niche in the space of entertainment that can deliver high quality content for the prices of the lower streaming service budgets.
And you've kind of seen this space evolve over the years. What has that been like, and how are you kind of staying ahead of the competition?
We're constantly, like I said, pivoting to keep our overhead low, hire like-minded people that have, you know, they love this genre and this content, and we're working with the streaming networks to keep people engaged mm-hmm. in shows, because as you know, between seasons is a long time sometimes, and people will jump ship to a different show.
Right.
And so the networks are now trying to figure out, how do we keep them there? How do we entertain them enough that they're going to be excited to come back for the next season? Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of building out new platforms for that.
A lot of entrepreneurs, people who want to start or grow a business, often don't, because they let that fear of failure get in the way. What advice do you have for those people who are wanting to start a business?
Well, initially, I mean, obviously educate yourself on how to run a business, because mm-hmm. I can't even tell you how many people have approached me and they're like, yeah, we're going to start this business and I've got my buddy and we both make movies and we're this and that. And I'm like, do you know how to run a business?
Right.
Like the nuts and bolts of running a business, and they have no clue.
Right.
So educate yourself on that, and especially finance. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest asset for anyone in this business is learning how to budget mm-hmm. and budget shows, but also budget your business.
Right.
And then network. I mean, you have to network and you have to get out there and do as many things as you can. But you have to do it. It's not just about, like, I have a great idea. Now you've got to package that idea, and you have to budget that idea, and you have to get people interested in that idea. And you have to look for weaknesses in the business that you're going into. Is there a business, if you're looking at the overall landscape of this particular, you know, genre that you're looking at doing, where is there a hole? Where can
right.
I fill a hole?
Right.
And that's sometimes not easy to find, but it will serve you in the long run. And, you know, everybody you talk to will give you a different piece of advice. So what the main thing is, if you're educated on how to run this business, you can filter through which advice you want to take.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I constantly see, is that people have a great project and then they'll meet with this company and the executives at that company will say, oh, well, it'd be great if you did this.
Right.
So then they constantly are changing, and then they lose sight of the original idea. And sometimes it gets so watered down that it's no good anymore.
So true.
And you have to really believe and love what you're doing, because that's another thing, is because you live with these projects for so long, unless you really have your heart into it, it becomes really, really difficult to get up every day and deal with it.
Yeah. What was the biggest challenge you faced when you started Pure Play Entertainment?
Well, it's just sustaining yourself while your business is growing, and you kind of have to have a balance of, is there another business that I can have a stream of income that can support me while I'm building this business? Because typically in the first couple of years, it's very difficult.
And what's the benefit of having a co-founder? How has that kind of helped you?
Well, picking a co-founder is really important, because
yeah.
you really need to find somebody that complements yourself, that has a different skill set than you. Because a lot of times people will get together that have the same skill set, and then you have to go out and hire everybody else to fill those voids. And we, like in my company, my partner is more of the financial side, and he does budgeting. He's a line producer. And I was more of the legal business side, but I'm also a very creative person. And mm-hmm. I it was really nice that we came together because we were able to complement one another and we don't have to go outside and hire a bunch of people. I can do the legal, he can do the bookkeeping and the, you know, budgeting and all of that.
What advice do you have for entrepreneurs who want to break into the content creation space?
For content creators, it's really understanding the space. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have great ideas for content. They just don't understand how to market those ideas and how to do the hard work of, you know, packaging those ideas. And a lot of them think, oh, I've got to go get an agent. Well, agents won't take you unless you have a track record.
Right.
And a lot of times agents don't see, there's a lot of really great agents, but sometimes they don't see your vision. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to hone your vision, build a really great presentation for your vision, get out and meet as many people as you can, network, get into where managers are that create talent, try to get, you know, talent interested, mm-hmm. even a director or a writer, another writer that a lot of times this is a huge part of it is that I always tell people it's better to have a piece of something that's a success than 100% of nothing.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of my clients, writer clients would come to me and they're like, I don't want to show anybody my script because someone will steal the idea. Okay, well, you can have 100% of that idea, which is never going to go anywhere.
Right.
Or you can go out and show your script around and right. and maybe end up with, you know, 40, 50% and have a huge success. So don't be afraid. Get out there and really market your ideas and yourself, and things happen, you
right.
know, and you have to listen to people, mm-hmm. but not always implement everything they tell you.
Right. And where can people learn more about you and your business?
We have a website, pureplayentertainment.com, and I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. I speak a lot and I travel a lot and I'm in different groups and things. I'm going back right now to NAB in Las Vegas. And yeah, I try to get involved and speak to women's groups and different groups all over. So yeah, you can find me all over. I'm online.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
This is Business Rockstars. That was my amazing guest, Leslie Masoner, executive producer of Pure Play Entertainment.
One step away from homelessness being that paycheck. I was just one paycheck away. So when I got there on Friday, no paycheck. There was probably another 14 people standing outside the front door who had the same conversation I had with my boss. He had skipped town, gone. And I called my landlord and said, I can't pay rent. This is what happened. He said, I already gave you 30 days. I can't give you another. And that was literally, you know, day one of going into homelessness. I was in Las Vegas. I was on the streets. I didn't have a couch to sleep on or friends. I had a couch at the time. I didn't have a car. My car got repoed, so I couldn't sleep in my car. I literally slept in abandoned buildings and basically ate wherever I could find food, which included, you know, dumpsters and garbage cans. My mom was like my ace in the hole. Yeah, I expected her to say what like most moms would say, which was, you know, don't worry about it. We'll buy you a plane ticket back to Jersey. You can sleep in your old bedroom. I'll make you a cup of soup, whatever, right? And she didn't say those things. Instead, she said, why don't you just go find a shelter? And very next call was to Eric, which was my last boss, my boss from years prior to. And he essentially said, I have this office space, and this office space is very tiny. I was thinking about starting a new business, but I'm not doing it now. The best thing about this office space, because it was so tiny, was that all the utilities were included. So I had electricity, but what was really cool is I had this really, really old desktop computer on a table that's like six foot table that had internet access because utilities were included. So I took this opportunity to spend 24 hours a day online, creating a resume, submitting it to a job application, being on Craigslist all day long, being on Monster all day long. And there was a lot of rejection, a ton of rejection. And it was all based on surface level. It was based on how I looked. When I'd walk in and people saw me, obviously I looked homeless. When I walked into the lobby, they'd come running out from behind the receptionist desk and go, hey, you can't come in here. And I'd be like, but I'm here for the job. Sure you are, you can't come in here. I forgave her for everything, basically. And what I look back on it now, just knowing that she had to do exactly what she had to do for me at that time. And today what I do is I extend that opportunity to others who are in the exact same position that I was 3 years ago.
Business Rockstars.
What are those things that you had to learn more slowly because you didn't learn it from another company?
You know, I can remember we were on a shoot once at a vacation rental home, and our client taught us how to set up our terms. Remember? And for payment, he's like, never do 50-50 because the client could walk away, they could delay. So he taught us to split it up into three different segments where you get half up front and 30% on a particular deliverable and then 20% at the end so that you're not as liable for being on the hook for 50% of the total cost of the project.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Youth vaping is a serious problem. One issue, flavored vapor products that help adult smokers switch, but may also appeal to youth. To address it, Juul Labs stopped the sale of non-tobacco and non-menthol-based flavored Juul pods to over 90,000 traditional retail stores. Learn more about Juul Labs' efforts to combat youth vaping at juul.com/youth-prevention. Juul Labs. For adult smokers only. Paid for by Juul Labs.
You should.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. The question of the day is, how do you hack the mind of the consumer so you can serve them in the greatest way and profit from it? Jenny Wong, you're going to help us answer that question in a second. You're the CEO and co-founder of Shopping Quizzes, and you're also the author of 7 Ways to Hack the Mind of the Online Shopper. So the question is, how do you hack the mind of the consumer to serve them in the greatest way and profit from it?
Well, the first thing that you have to get clear on is that not all of your consumers are coming to your site for the same reason or thinking the same thing. No matter what you sell, you can kind of apply an 80-20 rule. 80% of your customers are there potentially just to look around, but there's 20% of your customers roughly that are there that are really trying to complete a purchase. They actually need something. We call them high intent shoppers.
Those are the ones we want to capitalize on.
That's right. Okay. So you want to make sure that your e-commerce site isn't just providing window shopping to the low intent shoppers, but that is really allowing the high intent shoppers to jump into your funnel and very quickly narrow down what they're looking for.
So you create that environment that basically says in an elegant way, are you in that 20%? If so, go this direction. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. If you want to scroll through all 200 dresses on this site, that's
already on your
site.
I don't know what I want,
site.
So I can do that.
Yeah, that's already on your site. You're already built for that. But what a lot of sites aren't built for is the shopper that comes and says, you know what, I have a wedding in a week. I have to order this dress today before it's too late for shipping. And I need to do it before my boss walks in or I have to leave for carpool. And so is your site serving those shoppers? You know, can you jump them to a top 3 list?
You go to a website and there's too many options. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. You know, the New York Times had a great article on it. They called it decision fatigue, which is another way of thinking of it. We have a monetary budget when we go shopping online, but we also have a mental budget. And if we spend all of our mental energy looking at choice after choice after choice, we actually run out of steam and leave and don't buy anything at all. That's actually the most common way that online shopping trips end, is with no purchase.
You guys have come up with a way to basically sift through that so that they can avoid information overload and actually go straight to what they're looking for. But how do you do that?
Well, what you want to do is what you would do if the shopper was standing in front of you, right? Mm. If you were face to face with somebody, you would ask them just a few intelligent questions about what they were looking for.
What are you looking for? And then if they say address, then the next question is, well, what type of address? And so on and so forth.
That's exactly right. Okay. And so it depends. So the reason we make our widgets custom is because it really depends on the retailer. But if you were looking for a pair of jeans, you know, I would ask you, do you like them to be light colored or dark colored? You know, do you like them this way or that way, tight or loose? There are some really basic questions that you can ask the shopper and then serve them a manageable choice set of, let's say, three options where now they are primed not just to browse, but to buy. And so that's one of the really, magical ways that you can hack the mind of your online shopper.
It really seems like common sense. Why are people not doing more of this?
Well, they're taking more of a data-driven approach instead of starting with the actual purchasing machinery, which is the brain. The actual piece of hardware that is deciding to buy is the primal caveman brain. And if you start with that—
The reptilian brain,
that's right? Exactly right, the reptilian brain. And if you start with that as your premise, everyone would wind up designing their sites the way that we design our widgets. But if you start with a database of SKUs, everybody winds up with left side filters that aren't that helpful or algorithmic product recommendations.
So yours is different than the left side filter, because that's what my question was. I see the left side filter nowadays. Pick the different price points or the different sizes or the different colors or types of suits or things like that. You're saying yours is different than that.
That's right.
Yours is actually asking a question.
That's right. It's based on a human decision-making model, right? So it's based on the way the brain likes to make yes or no decisions.
Yours is just if this, then that logic implemented into the widget?
Well, it's built on cognitive principles like processing fluency. So for example, those left side filters that you use, if you see, a list of like 40 possible boxes of brands that you could check, how cognitively difficult is that for you to even make a decision on the left side filter itself? And you haven't even gotten to the thumbnails of shirts yet, right? So that's one of the things that's really different is that it's a conversational model. The left side filters don't feel like conversation, but our quizzes do.
Jenny Wong is my guest. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We're talking about how to hack the mind of your consumer to serve them in the greatest way and be able to profit from it. Jenny Wong is the CEO and co-founder of Shopping Quizzes. You're also the author of 7 ways to hack the mind of the online shopper. And so we talked about the paradox of choice.
Yes.
Let's go into the next one. What's the fourth thing that we're going to talk about, which is the fourth chapter in your book?
So micro commitments are very powerful.
What are micro commitments?
So micro commitments are the baby steps. I mean, that's the English language for it. Yeah. Baby steps, right? So before somebody gives you a credit card on your website and pays, $50 for a purchase, what is a baby step that you can get them to take that will help smooth the way to that conversion, that ultimate financial transaction that you want them to commit to, right? So micro commitments can take a lot of different forms.
Just be answering a question. That's a micro commitment.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't have to be a quiz. Like, for example, one of my favorite online beauty sellers allows you to buy a sample for 80 cents. So the first conversion—
A one-click upsell?
That's right. They're trying to sell you an 80-cent sample. But once they've done it, they've shown that they're trustworthy with your credit card. Now they can sell you an $80 package of skincare.
What the heck is the reactance theory?
Well, if micro commitments is baby steps, then reactance theory is what we normally call reverse psychology.
Okay, right? So how do you capitalize on that for hacking the mind of the consumer?
So the way that the human brain works is we don't like freedom being taken away. And so you can use this to grab attention, and you can also use this to complete the sale. So
give me a contextual example.
Yeah, so in terms of grabbing attention, there was a really famous sort of outdoor ad that happened recently where it said, like, don't buy this jacket. Well, you're not used to seeing advertising that says, don't buy this, right? So that immediately
grabs
your
attention.
Totally. And so that's a great way to grab the attention, is to say something that's really unexpected and trigger a reverse psychology. Another thing that you can do is say, like, you have freedom, including to change your mind, right? So liberal return policies are good as well. And then finally, one of the things that you want to be really careful of is labeling. So some people use their quizzes to assign labels like, oh, you're classic, you're trendy, you're preppy, but you need to be careful because that can actually make people rebel against their label. So it's better off to, in that case, you want to not trigger reactants and instead say, just tell me, instead of like what style you are, instead of saying labeling you as eclectic, just tell me if you want leather or fabric on this sofa.
Wow.
And so you avoid that hidden response that people don't realize is working against them as a retailer.
Three amazing tips from Jenny Wong. You're a rock star. I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Start thinking more clearly and realistically about growing your small business. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Some entrepreneurs spend months trying to raise more money than they actually need to achieve proof of concept. Many get stuck on the grand vision of their company's future instead of deploying the resources and assets at their disposal. This is entrepreneurial brain freeze. If you're trying to borrow money before you've gotten one customer, you're likely going to give away more equity than you have to, or it's going to cost you way too much to borrow money. There can be huge benefits in shrinking your grand vision, shaking off the entrepreneurial brain freeze, and proceeding with calculated baby steps rather than rushing a new business to the finish line. Only borrow what you need, not what you want. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Oh my gut! We need to talk about something. Constipation, abdominal pain, and bloating. You tell yourself, it's not that bad. You take laxatives and modify your diet and exercise routine. But thinking about it all the time is frustrating. This doesn't have to define you. If your constipation comes back again and again and you don't know why, then it may be time to seek help. Go to ohmygut.info where you can learn more about your symptoms and get to know your gut. That's ohmygut.info. ohmygut.info.
Jim Pee-wee Martin was in the Battle of the Bulge and describes the terrible conditions he and his few paratroopers faced.
You know, when you're really cold, you shiver to keep warm. We had so little food, not enough energy, and we quit shivering. That means you're really in bad shape. The doctors couldn't understand how we survived.
The American Veterans Center protects the legacy and honors the sacrifice of America's veterans. But it's up to you to keep their story alive. To hear the rest of Pee-wee's story, go to AmericanVeteransCenter.org. That's AmericanVeteransCenter.org.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Jo Angelo is joining us right now. She's the CEO of Genev. Recap for us what your company does.
Genev is a women's healthcare company focused on women's hormonal health, and we provide healthy products and content to help women live the best versions of themselves.
So you said you guys are providing products on the back, because I was going to ask, how are you guys able to monetize what you guys are doing? So how do you go and get these products? Are you the ones making them? Are you finding, you know, products that you end up white labeling? Are you doing joint ventures and affiliates and host beneficiaries? How are you guys doing it?
It's a combination. So our healthy products, they're consumer products. We sell them on Amazon.com, Walgreens.com, and we sell them via direct via Genev.com.
Okay.
And they are products that we both manufacture. We've also private labeled some. We develop our products focused on the symptoms women experience with hormonal change in their body. And so a couple of the products, one in particular, we have developed ourselves and manufacture. It's got FDA clearance. A couple of the others we've private labeled with the Genev brand, just to give a family of products for women.
Nice. And so when it comes to selling those products, is it specifically inbound marketing for people reading your content, or do you guys actually have different strategies and tactics to go out, put advertisements and marketing campaigns out that yield sales?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just content marketing?
Yes.
Is it both?
It's a combination of both. So content marketing is huge, obviously, because we're building a consumer brand that's based on trust in a relationship with women around their health. So that's one facet. The other, we do some paid advertising, obviously search and SEO work just to start to build our brand. We've done some press as well. And then we obviously market through the Amazon and Walgreens engines that we're part of from a distribution perspective.
Nice. What have you found being some of the best platforms to distribute your content? And what have you found being some of the best platforms to sell on? Because a lot of people are doing Facebook ads, LinkedIn, you said Google, SEO, different things like that.
what's working best for you?
So on the content side, we're obviously publishing ourselves direct and then pushing that out through channels. We're really building the backlinks with different influencers in the women's health space, whether it's mommy bloggers or, you know, bloggers focused on nutrition and exercise and so forth. But we also publish a lot to Medium. It's a long form space that a lot of people appreciate content, and that's the kind of original content that we're creating with medical experts and with women telling their stories. On the marketing side, or the digital marketing, Facebook ads, huge. Our space, because women's health sometimes includes some terminology that is a little bit more sensitive in nature, we really have to work with Facebook to find the right language so that it is publishable. Same with YouTube and Google.
Awesome. And I know that it is difficult to deal with Facebook sometimes with the wording and everything like that. A lot of people don't understand. And I think that if you dominate Google search engine optimization, people are probably, I know you and I talked, we said we can't say some of the things, but people are probably all typing that in on Google. And if you guys can make sure that you're, you know, paying for those $12 keyword searches, then you guys are going to dominate. But then you got to have a good lead capture and funnel and conversion process at the back end. What has it been like for you? Because I know this is new for you. Getting into this space, dealing with generating, qualifying, nurturing, converting leads, how has that experience been for you?
You know, first of all, when you come from a big corporate space, I was an executive in the corporate space, so I had a team that did a lot of this work. So I've learned to do it myself. That's number one. And you've got to understand it and dig in. I think more than anything, especially as well as a startup, you have small budgets. And so I can't go out and put the $12 on a term that a big competitor, a big brand that's already in the space is buying on. And so I've got to find the long tail terms, own those, and start to build gradually. Especially on the content side, that's where I'm going to build loyalty and trust with consumers. And so that's my angle to trying to find a unique and different way into this business. A third mechanism is really focusing on the medical referral channels. I'm talking to doctors, physical therapists, women's wellness spas and centers, oncology departments to get our products into their space so it develops that word of mouth.
How has it been received from influencers, from partners, from doctors, from different things like that? Has it just been kind of like, we get it, let's do something, let's figure out how to make it work? Or has there been like, well, I don't know?
It's, we get it, you know, for a long time.
Because sometimes first-year businesses have trouble conveying the message, the value proposition, and setting something up in their first year.
Yeah. You know, I'd say with our audience, with women and with medical professionals, they're like, oh, we get it. In fact, when we started this, we surveyed 1,500 women to understand the kind of products they used and where they bought them. And we came back, they gave us feedback we didn't think we'd get. And they said, would someone start the dialogue already around this topic? So, well received there. From investors, that's where a topic like this is kind of like, you're not in my
space.
Are you
trying to get investors
right now? I don't quite get it. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. I'm curious to find out how you are looking to raise money and then allocate it. CEO of Genev, Jill Angelo, is joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We're talking about investors right now. Why do you think you need investors? What are you going to do with the money?
I need investors simply to get the business going. In my space, I'm in the manufacturing space, so I need cash outlay for products up front, as well as to build a consumer brand. It requires digital marketing. And so that's where investors are coming in to fund the business.
Okay. And you're going to use the money for products. You're going to use it for marketing to grow the team and everything like that.
Yes.
How has that process been? Is this your first time trying to raise money?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's been probably one of the harder parts of the job.
I was going to say.
I had original angel funding up front, and that was a great kickoff and support system to get the business going. And I think maintaining that, especially in the manufacturing space, I've got to find an interesting combination of debt-driven funding for production and then save the equity for team and consumer brand building. That's kind of my strategy. And finding that right mix is a challenge just to get it right, especially at such an early stage.
What has been one of your best lessons so far when selling? I remember when I was going out raising millions, and it's just a crazy experience to sit down with high-level people that can write a check for seven figures. And getting the feedback from them and being nervous. And what has been one of the best lessons for you that you could share? Because a lot of people out there are probably like, I'm trying to raise money too. I'm struggling, or I'm trying to figure out if it's right to raise money. What's been the best lesson for you on that process?
Well, first of all, really understand the investor and their motivations. Mm-hmm. If you go talk to them and they're not interested in your space or in your kind of business, you're just wasting their time and you're wasting yours. And I've learned that. I've been told that as advice, but I think once you really feel it, when you find that connection with someone who's really interested in your space, that's great. I think as well, know your numbers. Understand the economics of your business and how one thing builds and leads to another, and then have that dialogue with the person. And it's okay if you don't know every answer, as long as they really understand how you think. That's probably the greatest bit of advice I'd give to somebody, because that's when you get into the dialogue and the intimidation factor goes away.
Awesome. I love that advice. Now I want advice on the person who has a 9-to-5 job. There's a lot of them out there. Yep. You made the jump. But I think there's so many people that are crippled in fear, crippled in uncertainty about, is it the right time? How am I going to pay my bills? We get all different types of answers. That's why I'm excited to get yours. Somebody has a 9-to-5 job. They want to, desperately want to cut the cord and go after their passions and their business. But for fear, uncertainty, and other variables, they're not going yet. What's your advice?
I think it's really hard to dip your toe and try and do it after hours. I know that, and that
that's
seems
what a lot
like,
of people say.
It seems like the logical way to do it, but you're never going to put yourself out there and truly be successful in a way that it requires. Like, this is a put your whole self into it kind of
you're
mode.
All in or you're not.
All in. Hmm. And honestly, you could always go back. You can always go back to the 9-to-5.
But most people are terrified of going back because if their friends and their family are like, well, you quit your job, which we already said not to do. You went out and your business failed. We were rooting for you, but we kind of knew it was going to fail, which is like, great. What a great friend or family member. And now you got to go back to the 9-to-5 job. That's like the nightmare. I think most people, employees are terrified of losing their job. Entrepreneurs are terrified of having a job. So to quit your job, go get be an entrepreneur and then have it fail and come back. It's like the nightmare of nightmares.
Yeah, it's not fun, you know, but you're going to have to make tougher decisions in the business than deciding to quit and go back. And hey, you know what? You maybe don't need to go back. You could do other freelance or whatever to sustain some income until you figure out the next step. But I think it's harder being an entrepreneur and the decisions you have to make versus going back.
I 100% agree. But again, to the point, a lot of people are going through that struggle in their mind, right? Oh no, what am I going to do?
And I don't want to. I have the same struggle. I'm not,
I remember thinking that before my business took off. I remember my first year and even at some points in my second year being like, oh my goodness, it'd be so much easier to just shut everything down. Mm-hmm. I'm only paying other people first. Like I'm working to make money to pay other people first. And pay myself last. And if there's not enough to go around, I don't get anything or I get very little. But I'm the one doing most of the work that ends up paying all these people. And it's just like, it'd be so much easier to go get a job and keep all my own money. And being in that place is such a terrible feeling. But I think having gone through that, pushing through it and getting to a place where you're like, now I'm at a place in my life where I don't ever have to worry about money. It's just like to look back and be like, you got through it. That's the goal, I think, of an entrepreneur is to get to that place. But you got to get through the hustle and you got to get through the adversity. Take me back to a season in your life where you had adversity. Could be maybe in this first year of your business.
It's right now. It's right now. Mm. You know, I'm 1 year into this business, so I'm in that place right now where you're worrying about money and you're paying everybody else before you're paying yourself and you're working like you've never worked.
Yeah.
You know, I've had 20 years in tech and I'm working harder than I've ever worked. There are super low days, but the highs are really great. And you just have to kind of say, okay, I have another woman that works with me and we're always like, okay, what are we celebrating today? And I know it sounds kind of hokey, but we're like, hey, let's celebrate the person who commented on that blog post because it was one person that we reached. And so we make it a point to have a little bit of quirky humor to keep our spirits up, to keep us going. But it's not, I'm in it. Right now, and every day is a self-talk to myself around staying positive and just fighting through it.
And that's huge. It's the self-talk going on in your head that's either going to crush you and make you quit, or it's going to get you back up and keep going. I love that you just said, you know, you celebrate the small wins. Reminds me of a quote from my friend John Assaroff. He says, celebrate the small wins as if they're big, and the big wins as if they're normal. Jill, it was a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you
so much. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. What do the best bosses do every day? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Your company is only as good as the culture, and that starts with the boss. Here are some things the best bosses do every day to provide a happy workplace and make them wildly successful. One, they don't micromanage. Be an amazing boss by taking comfort in the fact you hired the right employees with the right talents and qualifications. Two, they reinforce good work. It's a simple concept. If you boost morale, you boost productivity right there in the workplace. Three, they listen. Here's a trick. Say, tell me more, to show you're actually listening or when giving feedback. Cultivating respect in the workplace doesn't happen all at once. It's about a series of daily habits that mesh creativity and leadership. It also instills trust in them as well. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0707. Enjoy.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Jeff Olson. If you use a proton pump inhibitor medication to treat your heartburn, you might be concerned about studies warning of side effects, including the risk for kidney damage.
I think the risk of a patient on a proton pump inhibitor developing kidney failure is very, very rare, maybe less than 1 out of 1,000. But it's still worth talking to your physician.
Dr. Ken DeVault says people using a proton pump inhibitor should ask two important questions. First, have I been diagnosed with a serious esophageal disease?
If in the past you've been told you have esophagitis, which is irritation of the lining, or Barrett's esophagus, you might do yourself harm by stopping it.
Question two, if I stop taking a proton pump inhibitor, can I find a different way to control my heartburn?
A certain proportion of folks can control it just with diet and lifestyle maneuvers.
Avoiding heartburn triggers like smoking, caffeine, fatty foods, and chocolate may help you beat the burn. Also, don't eat too much too fast and avoid meals right before bedtime. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. This is our CEO roundtable segment. And as always, two rockstar CEOs are joining us right now. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Kara Santana, CEO and founder of the Glam App.
And what is the Glam App? Do you might as well give us a little bit of background on it?
Right. The Glam App is Uber for beauty. It's hair, right, makeup, and nails on demand.
All right. Well, let's see if he is the Uber of something, too. What do you do?
My name is Taylor Walker. I'm the CEO and founder of Earth Encounters. It's a gaming company. We create board games, educational board games that are also fun, but teach people about societal issues in a competitive way.
Very cool. Give me a contextual example. Tell us about one of those games. I think that's awesome.
Okay. So, like, for instance, answer me this. What changed the world more, Google or Facebook, and why?
Google or Facebook? That's a tough one. I would say Google, okay, just because it's an educational tool. It's a learning tool. Mm-hmm. For Facebook can be as well, mm-hmm, but I feel like Facebook's more of a news feed, mm-hmm, where if you're following the wrong people, you're going to be conditioned with the wrong information.
Right.
All of my friends on Facebook and followers and stuff like that, it's pure motivation. You scroll down my news feed, you're going to walk away like you're on fire. You're going to be
exactly
motivated.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a typical average person, you probably have, you know, friends that are conditioning the wrong things on your newsfeed, mm-hmm, whereas Google is going to be based on the individual user. If you're typing, mm-hmm, in good things, number one search thing on Google is how-tos, mm-hmm, and that means people are looking to learn when they go on Google, mm-hmm, whereas Facebook, you're looking to be conditioned with social media. That's my input.
I'm going
to
say Facebook because it's like connective.
I feel like it's a trick question, obviously.
It's a connective tissue that creates communication anywhere in the world, and you can have a conversation with
through friends and family,
yes,
right? See, there's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
But see, the fact is we're creating that dialogue. And so what we've done is we've created a whole myriad of issues, and we put it into a platform where people can talk about and discuss these dialogues. And so
that's great idea.
Very cool. What was the hardest part about getting your company started? And then we'll talk about Kerasil.
I would say the hardest part about getting started was the funding part. So we went through Kickstarter, a crowdfunding campaign, and I've never done anything like it of the sort. And so originally, it was just a learning curve for us, and putting together the Kickstarter campaign, putting together our team to help promote what we were doing and getting our news coverage and stuff like that. I think that was the hardest part for us.
I can totally identify, because I just feel like I got very lucky in our first seed round of funding or with our angel investment. But now that we're gearing up for the second round, it is, there's so many things that I don't necessarily know because my background is not in business and it's not in finance. And there's just so much to navigate. So, and money makes or breaks a business. So it's super important.
Information for sure. What do you think is something that you would go back and share with yourself when you were getting started? I think maybe it could have been to avoid Kickstarter or how to do Kickstarter better.
I would just say prepare more. So what I just kind of took 6 months in order to put together our campaign. But when I, after the fact that I did my research, it turns out that companies were actually taking a year, at least a year in advance to market their, to basically build their community, market their product, and then come out with the Kickstarter campaign. So I think preparation was a little, I would have went back and did a little bit more of that, but it turned out okay.
It's a good one. Kara?
Oh gosh, I mean, there's
the Glam app's been around for 17 months, so what's something that you wish you knew when you got started?
You know, I think for me, being a woman and being a young woman and being a young woman who doesn't have a business background, there were so many things to navigate. And I think I oftentimes didn't choose my battles because I felt such a sense of need to sort of change people's perspectives. And I would, going back and looking in retrospect, I would say, you know what, just focus on what it is you're trying to accomplish and don't be so bogged down with the criticism and negativity.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, us being entrepreneurs, you have to just, you know, be very strong in your resolve with whatever you're doing, with whatever company you have. So there's going to be a lot of doubters out there, and you want to just push through that and just see your vision through to the end. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. I love what you just said, which was doubters. We can call them haters, doubters, whatever, people that don't support us.
They come in many different shapes and sizes, but I mean, you just got to stay strong, and being an entrepreneur is a bumpy road, and you have to have that type of resolve in order to be successful.
You come from an acting background, so at some point, you've learned how to overcome fear of rejection, what other people think about you, being nervous on stage or on camera. Those are all things that I feel like a lot of people struggle with, which is why they stay in a safe, secure, certain, comfortable environment, job, life, relationship. So I think at the end of the day, every entrepreneur starts to condition themselves with a new way of looking at failure, a new way of looking at rejection, a new way of not so much caring about what other people think. When do you feel like you had developed that mindset, and what do you think are some keys to developing that mindset for people that maybe don't have it yet?
For me, I was an athlete, and so I played college sports. And so, I mean, my coach would yell at me all the time. So that's like one form of rejection. So just, you know, being able to, I've also been able to, like, you know, have interviews and stuff like that and press conferences and stuff like that. So I've kind of been able to, it's kind of molded me, or I've kind of taken some of the skills I've learned from that experience in order to, like, help me in the entrepreneurial space. But I mean, I'm sure you'd go through the same thing in acting.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I said it earlier, is rejection is just one more attempt at success. So it's like, it's another opportunity. And I think if you look at the glass half full, as opposed to half empty, you're probably more inclined to continue to push through, as you said, and have that resilience. And and so I just try and, you know, learn from everything that happens, good or bad.
Yeah, one of my mentors always used to tell me, like, he wants to fail because the more he fails, the more he gets to learn stuff.
Exactly.
And so all your failures as a whole make up the your whole being, and that contributes to your success.
And that's a shift that a lot of people have to learn how to develop, is at the end of the day, what separates successful entrepreneurs and people in general is the mindset. We're here at the CEO Roundtable. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining us is two rockstar CEOs. Give us a quick recap. Who are you and what do you do?
Kara Santana, CEO and founder of the Glam App, an on-demand beauty platform bringing consumers and providers of beauty together.
Thanks for being here.
Taylor Walker, co-founder of Earth Encounters, a gaming company that creates socially conscious board games, and I sell board games.
Did you guys always think that you were going to be entrepreneurs? Like, she stumbled into it. I know.
Yeah, I just fell
into it. She stumbled into it. But what about you?
I kind of did. I mean, I saw growing up, I saw my father both do the entrepreneurial thing. He used to do licensed beach towels for both the Lakers, Michael Jackson. And then I also saw him do the corporate side of things. And I just saw the kind of toll, the emotional and stress that it put on his body. And so I kind of didn't want that for myself. And so I always knew that when I was going back and getting my MBA, I wanted to put all these skills I'm learning towards creating my own.
Guys, I wish we had more time. It's been a pleasure having you with us. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.